Welcome to Recalculating America. Like its award-winning book, Recalculating is dedicated to small business in America and has been named the best small business book in the Independent Press Awards competition. Each Recalculating program is dedicated to helping small business leaders add profits through efficient growth. During every Recalculating program, experts will give listeners useful information about starting or growing their small business. Your hosts are Don Mazzella and Dan Perkins. Don Mazzella is the editor-in-chief of the Small Business Digest. Dan Perkins is a registered investment advisor with 43 years' experience in managing money. He specializes in helping small business owners make their money work as hard as they do.
Hello, Dan.
Good morning, Don.
We have a really great program today. Our first guest is Jessica Rosen. She is the owner of Raw Generation, a really fascinating New Jersey company, and we welcome her to the program now.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Good morning, Jessica. Dan Perkins here. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Do you give me free samples of your stuff?
It would be too difficult. we ship it frozen.
People say there are more than 5,000 products in the organic food category in the United States. And they'll be at the Fancy Food Show, which is amazing to me. So, Jessica, tell us about yourself, how your company got started, and what it is you do at your juice company.
Sure. My interest in nutrition started in 2010. I was in my mid-20s, and I had found out that my grandmother, who I was very close with, was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And it was very hard for me to digest what was actually going to happen. I didn't realize that cancer, you know, would work that fast. And so while she was going through treatments, I started cooking for her because I wanted to make sure that she was strong enough to go through chemo. And that's when I really saw the light in terms of how nutrition affects your health and well-being and your life. I started, you know, reading every book that I could, and then that turned into enrolling at the Institute for Integrative Nutrition, which I completed in August of 2012, the same month that we launched Raw Generation. So while I was in nutrition school, I was also working with my father on a completely separate business. And he's my business partner. We both started this company in 2012, and he's been a serial entrepreneur his whole life. He's really good at starting businesses and getting them off the ground. So he wanted to start a new business, and we worked really well together. So we had a couple ideas, and Raw Generation was one of them. And it was the only one that I really felt passionate about and, you know, felt I could really sink my teeth into for, you know, many years. So we decided on a juice company, and we started in August of 2012.
So I based on what you're telling me, I want to take a little different tack just for a couple of questions.
Sure.
You said your father was a serial entrepreneur, but you, mm-hmm. at a very young age, what were you doing when these life-changing events took hold of you? What were you? Where were you working? What were you doing?
I was working for my father. I was helping him systemize two of his existing businesses, one of which I got done in probably like 6 months. We finished right before we started developing Raw Generation. And the other one was a seasonal business, so it took a couple years to finish. But before that, I was designing men's clothing. My background is actually in architecture, so I went to school for that, and I worked at an architecture firm for a very brief stint before I realized that I did not want to be an architect. So my background is really in design.
So you, again, you would be what we would call a demographic study, a millennial. And
yes, I just make that distinction by like a year.
Okay. So you were classically trained as an architect, went to work and found out you hated the job.
Yeah, pretty much.
So what was wrong with that decision making process?
Well, you know, looking back, I kind of knew when I was in college that I didn't want to be an architect, but I was so far through school that changing majors just would have, you know, it would have added like another 3 years onto college. So I liked school, so I went through with the degree. And then, you know, I got recruited to a firm with a nice right out of college salary. And then, you know, I got into the job and I knew I didn't like what I was doing, but I could have stayed if I had seen something that I had wanted to do, like from my superiors. But I, you know, I saw what everyone else was doing, and I just, there was nothing that I wanted to, you know, there was nothing that, no job that I wanted to acquire that made me want to stay in the industry. So.
Okay, so let's go back to the juice business. When did you start the idea of the concept of this juice company?
We started talking about it, I would say, halfway through 2011, my father and I. And then we went into his seasonal business. He has a business where he imports and sells Christmas trees at retail locations.
Uh-huh.
So we went into that business. And then beginning of 2012, as soon as the Christmas tree business was over, we started developing Raw Generation, and it took about 6 months.
But it was not a vacant space. There was already, wasn't there already a lot of juice companies involved?
I wouldn't say there were a lot. There was Blueprint, which is, I think they were the first to become really big. There was that, but in terms of like juice companies popping up everywhere, we were at the beginning of it.
Okay.
So when we started out, my father took over the production end of the business. So he made sure, you know, we could make the juice and ship it. And then I took over the marketing and sales end of the business.
Mm-hmm.
So which suited our personalities and our skill sets very well.
So what makes your juice, your product line, different than other juice companies, and who would you consider to be your major competitor?
So we have, first of all, there's like two different types of juice. Well, there's actually three. There's like Tropicana, which shouldn't even be called juice. It's highly processed and it can sit in a refrigerator for months. And then there's the other juice companies that are popping up in like Whole Foods now, which are like Suja. They call themselves, you know, cold pressed. They're like the smaller companies. Blueprint is also one of them. But in order to be in a grocery store, you have to have some sort of processing done to your product, because fresh raw juice only lasts refrigerated for about 3 days. And in order to be in a grocery store, you have to have a shelf life of, I believe, 3 weeks. It's at least a couple weeks to be in the grocery store. So we took the route of freezing our juices and shipping them frozen, because freezing is the only way to preserve the juice and retain the shelf life without destroying the nutrients and the enzymes and all the really beneficial stuff that you're getting from juice. It's the whole reason to drink juice is because it's like liquid vitamins, and it really just instantly nourishes your body and gives you very, very quick results, because your body doesn't have to do any work to break it down and digest it. It just absorbs all the nutrition immediately.
This is beyond my chemical pay grade, but is it equivalent of a concentrate when you freeze it?
No, it's not. Concentrate takes all the water out, I believe. our juices are not from concentrate. Fresh raw juice is just fruits and vegetables. The whole, you put the whole thing through the juicer and it extracts the liquid portion of the vegetable or fruit, and it takes out the fiber. Or it takes out, our machines take out a lot of the fiber, but not all of it. It's just the liquid portion of the fruit and vegetable.
Okay. And do you do individual juices or blends?
All of our juices are blends of fruits and vegetables, and we sell them in as cleanses, which that was a decision. We didn't actually start out making juice cleanses. We started out making individual green juices, and that didn't really work in terms of being, you know, new to the market and not having a big customer base or a big audience. And so early on in the business, I want to say we were open for about 6 months. I closed down the website and rebranded us and came up with a new product that was a juice cleanse, because I noticed that juice cleanses were becoming more popular in the health and nutrition world, and also they're great for weight loss. So we came out with our first successful product, which was the Skinny Cleanse. And so we sell other juice cleanses. We sell individual juices, but in larger packs. And then we also make dairy-free nut milks, like a cashew milk, coconut, hemp milk. And we're also in the process of developing a line of raw drinkable soups, which should be coming out in the next month or so. But so we really started expanding into other drinkable, nutritious foods, you know, outside of juices. But, you know, it's still in the same family.
What's your primary distribution outlet?
We sell 100% online. We do most of our business through our website. Another avenue we use is Amazon and also Groupon. Those are, I would say, our three top channels for selling.
So what has been your growth over the last 3 to 4 years?
Every year except for 2016, we doubled in size. Last year, I had to take a temporary leave of absence for personal health reasons. So we kind of stayed flat from, you know, we did roughly the same amount that we did in 2015, which, you know, all things considered is a very good sign. But yeah, so year over year, we've doubled in size in terms of sales.
So you're healthy now and you're back on the job?
Yep, I'm back at it. And this year, it looks like we're going to double what we did last year.
What's the hot product at the moment?
We just launched a juice till dinner cleanse. So one of the difficult things about juice cleansing is you have to be in the right frame of mind to really be able to do it successfully and not be miserable, because it's hard. You know, we're used to chewing and eating, and for a period of days, some people find it hard. So we decided to launch an easier juice cleanse. You do a couple juices throughout the day, and then you eat a healthy meal. So this has seen we've seen tremendous interest from our customer base just in the last week that we've launched this product, because I think it's just mentally easier for people to do.
Dan, we have to interrupt right now for a word from our sponsor. So stand by, please. We're talking with Jessica Rosen. She's owner of Raw Generation, a very interesting juice company.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
Dan, we're talking with Jessica Rosen. She's owner of Raw Juice, a Raw Generation, a juice company right here in New Jersey. I'd like to jump in, Dan, and ask Jessica an interesting question that just came across my computer. Jessica, do you have a lot of repeat business, and how do you get people to, besides having a good product, to continue to buy?
That's a good question. I think about 50% of our customers are repeat customers, which I know is pretty high, but we do a lot of email marketing. So, you know, once you purchase from us and you opt in to our email list, or you come to our website and don't purchase and opt in, we then email you pretty consistently depending on what we've got going on. We try to give a lot of relevant content that is going to be useful to our consumer in terms of having more energy, you know, tips to lose weight, healthy recipes, anything in that realm. We try to come up with new content and push it out to everyone on our list. We also offer a hefty discount for subscriptions. So if you buy one of our products and you like it and you want to do it, you know, let's say you want to do a juice cleanse once a month, you can sign up for a subscription at, I believe it's 75% off of our full retail price. And you get it delivered automatically once a month, or however, you know, you can set the time frame. And then, you know, there's no commitment. You can cancel any time. So we do, since we've launched that option, the subscription option, we've gained quite a bit of repeat business on top of our already high rate of repeat customers. But, yeah, we use email marketing to the fullest in order to capture the sales of repeat customers.
Would you consider your product a health food product, or where would you put it in the if it were in the a store, in a supermarket, where would someone find it?
Well, the way we sell right now, it would be in the frozen section because we freeze everything and ship it frozen because it extends the shelf life without degrading the nutrients and enzymes, all the good stuff that you want to get out of the juice. So, I mean, it's definitely one of the healthiest foods that you can eat or drink because it's just liquid nutrients that are extracted from the fruits and vegetables. And then, you know, you consume it and your body digests it and absorbs all the nutrition within 20 or 30 minutes. So it's definitely a health food. But if we were to be in grocery stores at this point, we would be in the frozen section. Although right now we only sell 100% online.
Well, let me ask one more question, Dan. Let me ask you this. I was at a meeting of some people. What are the colors of your products? Because they indicated that apparently people are either extremely excited about the seeing a product, a health food product that's green, or not. Some people are turned off. I know it's a kind of a funny question, but what are the colors of your products?
Well, it's kind of like a rainbow. We have a couple different green juices, which are obviously green, and then we have a citrusy juice, which is orange, carrots, and ginger. So that one's orange. We have a red one that's red, which is apples, carrots, beets, and lemon. And then we have our dairy-free nut milks, which are they're like I don't know, tan, beige, like in that family. So it's really a whole different range. But it depends on the color depends on the fruits and vegetables that are in the juice.
Do you ever get feedback from people on the color?
Not so much the color, mostly the flavor. I feel like juicing is, the taste of juice is very subjective, and some people love it and some people don't. And it has a lot to do with, I think, how familiar you are with drinking fresh juice, because it tastes very different than the juice that is sold in stores.
Back to you, Dan.
Thank you. Jessica, I was listening to your discussion with Don, and you talked about a 75% discount for people who offer subscriptions to buy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a huge giveaway on your profit margin.
Yeah, it would seem that way, but we are set up to be able to discount heavily. So we build the discounts into our pricing, and we protect our margins. So we have a threshold, and we don't go below that.
Right. Now, if you listen, I was listening again to what you were talking about, and you said in our earlier segment, you're 100% internet. When you were and your father were discussing this business opportunity, was it always going to be internet, or was there a, did you have thoughts about possible distributions to companies like Whole Foods or somebody else?
In the very beginning, it was 100% internet. We figured that was the easiest way to get started. And it was, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, it was relatively easy. I mean, we had to figure out production and how we were going to actually get the physical product to the customer without it being spoiled. But we figured that all out within the first, you know, before opening our doors. So it was always, to start, we knew we were going to be 100% internet based. Throughout the process of us growing and developing, we've entertained the idea of going to grocery stores a couple times, but we found out that selling on the internet and selling through a grocery store is a completely different, there's completely different models.
Absolutely.
And so we would have to, aside from that, we would have to change a lot of the things that we're doing in terms of how we make our product. We would have to process it, which goes against like everything that we're promoting. So we decided not to go that route. And, you know, also we were like, if it isn't broken, don't fix it. Like, we're doing very well on the internet. And then, you know, we might end up, if we thought that if we went the grocery store route selling wholesale, you know, we might get into it. We might have, you know, a bunch of money invested in it. And then we decide that our juices just don't work in retail locations. So we've gone back and forth probably twice about whether we wanted to do that. We've also entertained the idea of opening our own juice bars locally to start, but that really, I don't know, every time we entertain something like that, we just come back to, let's just keep focusing on what's working for us, which is the internet.
Jessica, we've got a little less than a minute. I want to make sure before we get much further, give our listeners a website where they can get a hold of you and look at your products.
Sure. It's rawgeneration.com, rawgeneration.com. And you can also find us on Amazon. Just search for Raw Generation or Groupon. Search for Raw Generation Juice Cleanse.
We've got about 30 seconds. Just for my own curiosity, tell me about how you connected with Amazon.
We just applied. So you can go on and apply with your business and set up your account, and then you just start running. You just start listing your products. It's very simple.
The cost. What do they charge you?
I believe it's 15% to 20% commission on what you sell.
Okay. But they give you a lot of exposure, I would assume.
Yeah, we do. Over the last year, our Amazon business has grown dramatically. And they have ways that you can advertise as well. You can bid on keywords and set up ads so that you get additional exposure, which is what we do.
Well, thank you, Jessica Rosen of Raw Juice Company. We'll put your web address on our website, and it'll be up there tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Dan and Don.
And back to you, sir.
Dan, well, let's hear a word from our sponsor before we do anything else.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. Simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit Biscom.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
You know, Dan, while we're waiting for our next guest, I'd much rather hear from you because an interesting fact came across my desk this morning that I would love to hear your comments on.
Okay.
Basically, it was from the Department of Labor, and it said that they expected one out of every four small business in the United States would be hiring in the next quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good sign. I know you've been talking about that. We've both been talking about it. But what's your thoughts on that, Dan?
I think it's probably a pretty good prediction. Everything that I can see and follow is that the momentum of just people who are listening to our show, who are interested in the possibility of starting their own small business, are in a situation where they feel that perhaps this is the best time or the best opportunity they've had for probably 8 years to make that serious decision about whether or not they want to start a small business. Small business is the business of America. It is where most of the hiring takes place. And so 25% of small businesses hiring is a very positive sign. I think that we're getting close to almost an explosion, and meaning that we're going to start seeing significant upticks in new job creation, and the bulk of that's going to come from small business, and I expect that to continue. I'm looking for a slow build through all of 2017, and then I'm looking for a continued growth where we're going to see, I believe you'll see gross domestic product in the United States in 18 north of 3%. Be good for the Republicans, not so good for the Democrats. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there, and for people who are looking for work and people who have jobs to help people. Did our guest come in?
Yes, he did. Dan, so I'm going to bring him on board right now so that our next guest is Adam Robinson. He's CEO and co-founder of Hireology. It's an all-in-one hiring and management tool, and I have to tell you, he's one of the more fascinating guests we're going to have on this program in a while. Adam, welcome to the program, and here's my co-host, Dan Perkins.
Good morning, Adam. Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
We have a couple of questions we're going to ask you, but the first and most important question is, do you have a website and how do people get a hold of you?
Sure. Our website is www.hireology.com, and you can find a link to my site for my new book, The Best Team Wins, at www.thebestteamwins.com.
So tell us about yourself. How did you become a co-founder of Hireology, and what did you do before you started this?
Well, before this business, I had a previous business that I had started where we were outsourced recruitment infrastructure for mid-sized companies. So in short, companies would hire our firm to be their recruiting department. And we would work on approximately 4,000 hires a year across hundreds of clients. And what I found as a consistent theme was our customers were terrible at interviewing and hiring people. So they would hire us, we would get in and scale up their mess. No process for determining what they really wanted, no procedures for interviewing, no way to pick the right person or compare notes. And so they wouldn't make decisions, or they'd make the wrong decisions, or they wouldn't follow up with candidates after they were submitted, and it became really hard to manage the company. So I created a system, a series of paper-based guides that we would give to our customers that would help them interview, hire, and score applicants. And customers started asking me if they could buy that system. I said no for years. Eventually, I sold that company in 2009 during the last recession, and made the decision after that to start a company that productized the systems that we developed in that company and sold them directly to the customers that we thought needed them and actually wanted them. And so that was where Hireology came from.
So let me ask you, if I might, I want to find a polite way to say this. It appears that based on what you just said, in your previous business, the ability of many of your corporate clients to successfully recruit and hire people was terrible at best.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay, so if that's fair, then why?
I don't think managers understand that, or they fully appreciate that hiring should be treated as a core and critical business process, just like sales, just like marketing, and just like core operations or finance. It is the most important thing that you do as an organization, is put the right people in the right spots. And furthermore, it's about 70% of your cost structure. Most companies have a better process for buying office supplies than they do for hiring people. But, you know, they're making ad hoc decisions for $50, $70, $100,000 a year assets. And it's the coin flip at best at most companies. And I think the root cause is that nobody ever teaches you how to do this stuff. So you learn it by trial and error. You know, you do interviews. You're desperate to fill the spot. You hire the person you like who you think has the chance, and you hope they work out. Well, what I can tell you is if you treat hiring as a core business process and monitor and measure it, you can improve your hiring results by 40% just by following a consistent process. And knowing the rest of your competitors are bad at this stuff, being 40% better at the thing that's the most important thing you do than your competitors, I call that a competitive differentiator. I mean, it's sustainable because most companies are bad at it. So we're in the middle of another talent war. Most companies are desperate for good people. The companies that figure out how to do this better than their competitors are the ones that are going to win. And, you know, I get pretty fired up about it. But it's an opportunity most companies don't even recognize they have.
And, Adam, a follow-up to that. Are you saying the same thing is true regardless of the size, even if they have a human resources department?
Yes.
Wow.
In many cases, it's exacerbated when there's a human resources department. I mean, you know, HR professionals are strategic administrative individuals. They're going to make sure you stay out of court. They're going to run your compliance programs. They're going to make sure the handbook is right. They're going to they're going to adjudicate grievances. They're going to handle claims against the business. They're going to manage the increasing regulatory state and all of the burdens that are on businesses to comply with state, federal, and local laws. They're going to do an awesome job of that. But recruiting is a sales process. It's not an administrative process. And unless you have your HR team out there in the market cold calling that next wave of great potential superstars, you're doing it. You know, you're not taking advantage of the opportunity. You're doing it wrong. I mean, managers, somebody needs to be responsible for recruiting that next generation of leaders and doers into your company on a proactive basis. HR is an administrative body. They're great at administration. Recruiting is sales. Do not run recruiting with administration professionals. Run them with sales-minded individuals.
I want to jump in here because I've had the opportunity to talk to Adam before. He's got this idea, this four basic things about hiring that I'd like him to go into now, because I think you'll find it you and the audience will find fascinating, and then your questions will flow out of that. Adam, will you talk about that?
Absolutely. So you're referring to what we call the four super elements. And these are the four factors that our research shows that, you know, when present in a candidate, makes them a much higher likely success, top 25% performer in any role, nearly any role in any company of any size. Right? These are the four key ingredients that predict a higher likelihood of success. And before I go into the detail there, I want your listeners to think about hiring like car insurance. So, you know, if you're State Farm, you don't need to meet me to know. You don't need to meet me in person to know that if I have a sports car in the garage and a 16-year-old driver on the policy, and my spouse has had five accidents, then I'm probably going to cost you some money at some point. I mean, based on my driving history and my personal situation and the kind of car I'm driving, State Farm knows within about a 3% margin of error whether or not I'm going to cost them money, and they can either charge me more or they can not do business with me. It's their choice. Right? Why does State Farm never forget to ask you what car you drive, or, you know, or whether or not you've ever had accidents? It's because it's highly predictive of whether you're going to have future claims. Why do health insurance companies want to know if you've ever had a heart attack? Right? Why do FICO scores work in finance? Why do they look at your prior borrowing history and have a pretty good ability to dictate whether you're going to repay loans in the future? Right? This also works in sports. Why does Moneyball and Sabermetrics work in baseball? Because you know what, if you know what you're trying to look, what outcome you're trying to achieve, that's players on base, you know what to measure, right? So it works in finance, it works in insurance, it works in baseball, it works in hiring, right? If I know what I'm trying to accomplish, and that's hire top quartile performers, I these are four things I need to look for. So here they are, no particular order. Attitude, right? A positive disposition toward work. Two, a sense of accountability, specifically an internal locus of control. Three is prior documented success in a job, which means my performance has been actively monitored and measured on a formal basis. And four, culture fit, which means I've succeeded in an environment that has systems and process the same as the one that I'm interviewing for. If those four things are present, it increases the likelihood that this person will be a top quartile performer by nearly 50%.
Adam, we have to stop here and take a break to hear from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back because I find this fascinating. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Don't let hackers get your data. Email is insecure and can't handle large files. Instead, use Biscom's Secure File Transfer product. Military-grade security that's as easy to use as email, and it can handle attachments of any size. Visit BISCOM.com for your free trial and make sure your private communications stay private. That's BISCOM.com.
We're talking with Adam Robinson. He's CEO and co-founder of Hireology. He's just given us the four basics upon which people should interview, and what I'm going to do is ask Adam to briefly repeat these and then go into discussion, because I know they're fascinating.
Sure. So the four super elements predict higher likelihood of top performance in any candidate for any job, and they are attitude, accountability, prior related job success, and culture fit. And so let's start with attitude. So attitude is a positive disposition toward work. So not necessarily I like this specific job, but more I like working. I like the act of work. And research shows that people who have a positive disposition toward work overwhelmingly outperform their peers. you know, so that begs the question, can people's attitudes change? Can, you know, you have, are you born with a positive attitude, a negative attitude, or can attitudes change? And I looked to research, really fascinating research on identical twins separated at birth in a study done by the University of Minnesota over a 20-year period where they interviewed hundreds of identical twins who were separated at birth. And what they found was, and remember, these folks never met each other. It didn't matter who they were, where they lived, whether the jobs they were in were blue-collar or white-collar, whether they were union or non-union, whether they were married or divorced, high school diploma, college diploma, kids, no kids, lived in Phoenix or Boston. It didn't matter. Identical twins separated at birth report statistically identical levels of job satisfaction. So said differently, when you control for the genetics, attitude is constant. So what it says about us as human beings is that our disposition toward work is much more likely hardwired in our genetic code than it is acquired. So in daily, you know, practical terms, the person walking around your office with the rain cloud over their head is might have some good days, but they're genetically predisposed to have more bad days than good days. And so if positive attitude leads to a higher likelihood of success, and we're trying to minimize our risk of bad hires, shouldn't we be screening for attitude in the interview? And it's really straightforward to do. Ask somebody, when was the last time you were so frustrated at work that you wanted to quit? Now, you know, many listeners might think, oh, that's today. But, you know, it's not really important why they were frustrated. What's important is how they describe it. So someone with a positive disposition toward work will go out of their way to take a negative situation and put a positive spin on it. They'll say, well, it was a really negative experience. It was a tough place to work. But, you know, these guys gave me my break in the industry, and I'm grateful for that. And while I'm moving on from that opportunity and looking for another one, you know, I'm glad that I had my time there. That's a great positive spin on a tough situation. You know, a negative spin would be, that guy's a jerk. That place lights people on fire. I can't wait to get out of there. So anyone who speaks negatively about the workplace in their interview is likely to have a negative attitude towards working in general, and I would just pass, right? That, for me, is a near automatic pass every time I hear it.
So, Adam, let's back up a little bit and let me ask you a more fundamental question.
Sure.
At what point in time in the size of a startup business should somebody like you come into the firm, right, and help a small business person?
Well, so what we do is we provide the system and the tools, right? So we're not recruiters or consultants necessarily. So the answer to my question is, from your very first employee, you should be treating hiring with this level of importance and following some core principles. So you think about it this way. Your payroll as a percentage of your total available capital is never higher than it is when you first start your company. I mean, most people's first hire is a white-knuckle, nerve-wracking experience of, I hope this guy works out, because if he doesn't, I'm out of business, I'm out of money, mm-hmm. Right? That first sales hire. So the risks are never higher than early in your life. And, you know, I'm a believer that the success of a company is directly related to their ability to hire great people for the first seven hires. I think the first six or seven hires will tell the story of whether or not that company is going to be successful. Are you building a bunch of culture issues and angst and strife? Are you putting together a cohesive team that can get you through that first $1 million revenue mark? Mm-hmm. Right? Whether you can do that or not, that's the whole deal. And so it's even more important the smaller you are, the earlier you are to get this right.
I have a friend who was, before he retired, was the charge of sales for the Kemper Insurance Company out of Chicago.
Yeah, my dad spent his entire career at Kemper Insurance.
Wow, and there was a sign on his desk. He said the sales department is the company.
That's fair.
Because without a sales department, you have no company. Because you have no sales. So is this more important in a company that needs every company needs sales expertise. Is this most important in hiring salespeople than it is staff people?
No. The short answer is no. It's equally important for all roles. Because while this, you know, there's no company without sales, there's also no company without customers. And if you can't keep your customers, sales don't really matter. You've got a leak in the bucket. And so what about all the core operating processes in the company run by people that, you know, that are touching your customer base? Billing and receivables, customer service and your support line, right? Are you putting the right people on the front lines that your customers are interfacing with after they become customers? I mean, all of those things together lead to better customer retention. And we can absolutely empirically tie better hiring results to higher levels, to lower turnover, and therefore higher levels of customer satisfaction in a customer base. It is directly correlated.
Are there businesses, this is somewhat of a loaded question because I want to take it somewhere, but I'll ask it to you anyway. Are there certain segments of our economy that are notorious for terrible service and poor customer relationships? Is there a particular group of people or businesses that fall into that category?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the last time I checked, you know, the airline industry was one of the few that was really good at physically assaulting its customers and dragging them off of the property. I mean, the airline industry is, I think, universally known as being pretty bad from a customer service standpoint. And so you think about the competitive differentiation opportunity available to an airline where people say, you know what, their people are actually pretty good. You know, there's a reason Southwest Airlines is the only airline over a 30-year period that's actually, created return on capital for their shareholders of any substance consistently. It starts with their philosophy that people are the center of the business model. They're just better. They care. Mm-hmm. It really matters. The airline industry is a great example of what happens when you put great people and empower them to do their job and serve customers.
The area that I was thinking about it's anecdotal based on my wife's experience, but I would say to you, the medical profession is amazingly insensitive. The arrogance and the how dare you ask a question attitude in many doctors that we've worked with over the years, all over the country, just amazing to me. And as my wife has a tendency to throw blood clots, and she has to monitor her blood level every week. And her INR numbers were up this weekend. She called her doctor's office, and the nurse was just, well, "Why are you bothering us? I mean, it's like we have more important things to do than to deal with your high INR numbers." And it just, and my wife has had a bad string here of other things that's gone, and she just really, really depressed about the quality of care and service from the staff people in the offices to even the doctors. I mean, it is amazing that it's not there. And yet I wonder if doctors' practices, do they use your techniques?
Well, here's what's really interesting, and I, you know, might be stepping on a landmine here, but there is a bifurcation in the medical field, between those practices that care about customer service and those that don't at a macro level. And the distinction that separates one from the other is whether or not the customer is paying cash for the service. So I can take all the hospital systems in general practices and, you know, anywhere you whip out the insurance card, the Medicare card, the Medicaid card when you go in for service, right? Ultimately, it's someone else paying for that service, right? Mm-hmm. It's a third-party payer.
Right.
And so everyone's paying the same rate, for the same service, and the customer doesn't really have a lot of control over being able to demand better service. They don't have any leverage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you look at all the areas where cash is paid, right? So you can go to any fertility clinic in the United States and you're going to have a 52% chance of getting pregnant if you're somebody that is eligible for that kind of medical procedure. You can't change that science. So the science is the same everywhere. Well, insurance doesn't really cover elective fertility treatment. So here's an example of an industry where the science is the same. 52% is written in stone. So what's the differentiator? Well, it's the customer experience. Why choose one clinic over another? Well, their service is better. And by God, I'm paying my hard-earned money for this procedure. I'm going to spend $20,000 on this. I'm going to get the best service I can find. And so you see these dynamics play out in these specialty healthcare networks. You see it in orthodontics. You see it in orthopedics. You see it in plastic surgery networks. You see it in MRIs. You see it in the LASIK centers. Anywhere people are spending their own money directly, they're demanding better service. You see a medical industry with a bigger concentration of focus on the right people, and those are the kind of customers that we have and work with. We typically do not work with monolithic healthcare systems because they frankly don't care who they put on the payroll.
Yeah. We got about 30 seconds, Adam. Again, tell our audience how they can get a hold of you.
You can check out our website at www.hirology.com. It's everything you need in one cloud-based solution to be good at the people side of your business. Check it out. You know, take a demo and see if it's for you.
But Dan, I'm going to go over a minute because I'd like Adam to talk a little bit about his book. In less than a minute, tell us about the book, which I found fascinating.
Sure. If you're looking for a step-by-step blueprint to do this yourself, you don't need systems or consultants or anything like that. Go to Amazon.com and search for The Best Team Wins. You can buy it in hardcover or Kindle version right there through Amazon. Again, The Best Team Wins. Build your business through predictive hiring. It's everything we talked about, plus all the interview guides, free tools, step-by-step blueprint that anybody can follow.
Thank you, Adam Robinson of Hirology. Thank you very much for being here today.
Now it was a pleasure.
Another word from our sponsors.
Hate your old fax machine? You can now fax through email. Simply write an email, attach the document, and send. Works with all major email providers. Get rid of the noisy and expensive old fax machine and try Biscom's Cloud Fax. Our solutions are great for businesses of all sizes. Visit BISCOM.com for your free trial. That's BISCOM.com.
That was a terrific guest, Dan. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to hear from your tip of the day, which I'm really getting to look forward to on this program, and maybe we should put it a little earlier in the program.
Well, that would be
right now. A tip of the day from Dan Perkins.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Will this be your summer to rediscover the red, white, and blue of America? American small business is back and growing again. We can say that the American people feel good about the red, white, and blue. If you own a small business, you should be proud of what you've accomplished. When you're out looking for new business, take some time to rediscover your past. When you drive into a new town, go to a gas station that's the cleanest and brightest and ask the station owner, "What should I be seeing during my visit to your town?" Make your business calls, but before you move on, go see what makes this town and its people so special. The next time you come through to make a call on that prospect, tell them what you found out about his town. The red, white, and blue of America may bring you great rewards in many ways if you'll just look for them. I'm Dan Perkins from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day.
Dan Perkins here from Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day. Do you have trouble sleeping on a road trip? I just finished a long road trip and the pillows were terrible. They were so bad I had to go to my chiropractor when I got home. She told me when she travels, she takes her favorite pillow with her. It's really hard to function effectively if you can't get a good night's sleep. And sleepless nights together could put you at risk, especially if you're driving a car. So here is your Recalculating Small Business tip of the day. How do you find the right pillow? Start with the one you have at home. If you like it, then go buy another one and take it with you. Look for travel pillows. These are smaller versions of the larger pillow, and that might work for you. If you're going to take a pillow with you, then put it in a bright colored pillowcase. That way it will stand out and you won't forget to take it home with you. Success will come with sleep. I'm Dan Perkins for Recalculating.biz with your small business tip of the day.
You know, Dan, you talk about a pillow. I sleep on three pillows and it's not enough for me. They're not soft enough. But looking back on today's program, Dan, what are your thoughts on our two guests?
Well, it was interesting. The first guest, she started at the get-go that she was going to build a business on the internet. She was not going to build bricks and mortar. She wasn't going to go to she wasn't going to Whole Foods or any of the grocery stores. She was going to sell it on her own. And she cut an alliance with Groupon and Amazon.com, and she doubled her business every year. And she had a medical problem in 16 that her company didn't grow, but it held its previous year's level. And now they're on target for 17 to double what they did in 16. So it's amazing that a young millennial worked with his father, her father, who was in the selling the Christmas trees, to create a juice company and found a way to apparently develop a very successful venture working on the internet. On the other hand, Adam, with Hirology, tremendous tips for our listeners today. A lot of things that could be put to practical use. He's got the book that we got a chance to plug, and he gave our listeners a lot of good insight. I thought both were excellent guests.
Right. Well, the reason I jumped in on the book was that I managed to get a copy before it came on the program. And as I went through it, as a matter of fact, last night, I was just amazed by the insight on it. And that's why I wanted to make sure people knew about it. But let's go on to another subject, Dan, which is supposedly the president and the Senate leaders are going to meet today on the changes in the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thoughts on that?
It's interesting how you look at what's happened since the president took over. The Republicans have fumbled the ball, their first attempt. The House passing was a good recovery. I heard yesterday that Mitch McConnell says that he is going to pass health care before they go home. And he may lose some people on his side of the aisle, but he has Mr. Pence, because I could be wrong on this, Don. I think it's a Rule 44. Rule 44 under the Senate rules is a very unique rule, which means basically there's no committee debate. You bring it to the floor and you vote on it, up or down. So the Democrats are really up in an uproar, because if he invokes a Rule 44, they don't get a chance to go through all these committees and all these speeches. They have to vote yay or nay. And so that's apparently how Mr. McConnell is going to bring this to the floor and see what can be done. So Rule 44 is the rule of the day.
Remember when I said to you that the Republicans have to learn how to govern, and they're finally learning how to govern and put it back on the Democrats? We don't want to make this a partisan program. We just want to say that health care and the cost of health care is still a major bone of contention and a major concern of small business leaders. We have about a minute left, less than a minute left. Any final thoughts as we get close to the nation's birthday, July 4th?
Well, we're going to have a situation. We're going to have sessions today testifying before the Senate Intelligence Committee. I think this whole thing is a distraction. People want to know, but we need the Congress to get back to doing the work of the people, and that's passing legislation that puts people back to work, and allows people to make it, get a, have a good job, get a decent wage, get people off of the welfare rolls.
Well, that's, we're out of time today, Dan. And talk again next week.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us on Recalculating. We hope the information you received on today's episode was helpful to you in starting and growing your business. Please go to our website, recalculating.biz, to contact us, to listen to past shows, and see special offers. Until next time, remember, if you grow, we grow. Join us next week for more helpful ideas to make your business a great success.